Welcome to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. This program will take you behind the scenes and deepen your understanding about the patterns and perspectives of leadership today. Now, here's your host, John Schmidt.
Well, hello. Welcome again, everyone, to this week's edition of Zoomed Leadership. I am your host, John Schmidt, and again today, as every week, I'll be taking us out to the big picture, into the up close and personal, and toward a world of desirable futures, those, of course, rich, as we know, with the essence of constant renewal. Well, it is great to be back with you today. I am broadcasting from a different location. I am on the west coast of the United States, on the shores of the Pacific Ocean, as opposed to the Gulf, where we have been so often. I'm on the Monterey Peninsula here of California at a beautiful conference center in the midst of Asilomar State Park. The water here is glistening as it is in the Gulf. It is clear, but the water is cold. The sea life, rich and amazing. And while I must say I am enjoying the western tides here and yesterday afternoon, the sea lions as well as the kelp on the beach strewn everywhere, my mind continues back to the east, to the warm waters and the coastal communities of the Gulf of Mexico, and to the continuing saga of the largest environmental disaster we have seen in the U.S. For most of you, you have seen much of the news, but let me recap this last week. In an article being published in an upcoming issue of Science, Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute researchers have presented proof of an underwater hydrocarbon plume in the Gulf of Mexico extending from the site of the Deepwater Horizon spill. The plume of hydrocarbons is at least 22 miles long, about a mile and a quarter wide, 650 feet high, located about 3,000 feet below the surface. They have shown conclusively not only that the plume exists, but also have defined its origin and its near-field structure, which until now has been treated as theoretical in the literature and in the media. And likewise, with that, also in a report a week ago today by the University of Georgia, researchers there have challenged the Obama administration's claim that three-quarters of the spill, three-quarters of the oil has dissipated or dissolved. They have suggested instead that the administration is absolutely incorrect and shows that at least perhaps more like 79% of the oil remains under the Gulf of Mexico. In the words of a Georgia Sea Grant director and marine scientist at the University of Georgia, one misconception is that oil has dissolved into water and is gone and therefore harmless. In his words, the oil is still there and will likely take years to completely degrade. We're still far from a complete understanding of the impacts. So these reports and others are continuing to point to the fact that there is much more to learn, there is much more to investigate, there is much more to consider regarding the realities of the spill and its aftermath, and to answer the questions, how do we and how might we present or prevent these catastrophes in the future? How do we establish new pathways to manage and exercise sovereignty over our commons? How do we exercise sovereignty over the Gulf of Mexico? These, my friends, are the background questions to our show today. One I think you will be absolutely intrigued with because it is about the early stages of a film, a documentary, and early stages of creation on just these subjects, just these questions. My guests today are Kevin Hansen, filmmaker, producer of more than 70 documentaries, and CEO of Pierre Terre, an independent media company, and Jay Bender, policy analyst at Global Commons Trust, a nonprofit that provides consultative services for social charters and commons trusts. Language and focus, you will recall that we talked about in the last year at least two shows with James Quilligan to introduce some or our orientation in that direction. Kevin and Jay join us today to explore early results of an important, what I think will be a new film project that they're involved in. It is devoted to the spill. It is devoted to the communities. It is devoted to a background context about these commons. And we're getting Kevin and Jay fresh after a recent opening round of up close and personal investigations into the real stories of the Gulf and the tragedies we've been experiencing, the stories of the people, stories of the community, the environment, and the thinking that has and is evolving on the ground, I think, as Jay will speak to as well, about how to manage, how to respond to what this crisis might be and continuing to think forward to the future. Kevin, Jay, welcome, guys. Great to have you on the show today.
Thank you, John.
Kevin, let me get started with you. You are a filmmaker and have flourished in creatively bringing to life a sense of what is really going on. You've done that on a number of important issues and very creative ways. Tell us about what you and Jay have been up to the last week.
Well, we really wanted to go down to the Gulf of Mexico to find out on the ground in real time what the situation was for people experiencing the spill and the leak, because the common resource of the Gulf of Mexico is so important for so many different people, in particular the people on the front line of it, the shrimpers and the fishermen. You know, they haven't had a season this year, so they're suffering tremendous economic hardship, and many of them, I have to say, are really angry about the current status of things. Also, they're concerned that they don't know for sure what the facts are. So they're left in this limbo where they don't feel they have the information to decide what to do. They care about producing shrimp and seafood that is of high quality. From a personal basis, they don't want to harvest something which is tainted. Because they don't know, they're not sure what to do. So the opening of the shrimping season recently in some parts of the Gulf has actually worried them, because they're not sure they can take the catch or sell the catch. So this is a huge ongoing thing, and we spent the last week interviewing many, many people from different perspectives, and I think there's some new information out there that's worthy of consideration by people concerned about the big things we share.
Great start, great helpful picture on that. Maybe, Jay, can you give us a sense of the range, as Kevin is saying, of the mix of types of people in the community, sort of the segments, the individuals, the many players involved in this that are really painting a picture and having questions about what's really going on?
Yeah, sure, John. Well, while we were down there, within a week's time, we interviewed 16 different people from a variety of community groups covering the NGO community, leaders that are trying to establish co-ops in the area. We talked to the academic community. Talked to indigenous leaders. We talked to independent fishermen and seafood distributors, like Kevin just mentioned. And we talked to citizens from various other cultural enclaves down there on the Gulf Coast. We did have limited input from local government and big business, but I think we were able, with this first round of filming and interviews, to paint a pretty broad picture of the folks that are affected by the oil spill. And not just the oil spill, but other natural disasters and just the general management of that whole natural resource base in general down along the Gulf Coast.
So can you guys say a little bit more, maybe Kevin, kick it off? There's a context here that certainly I mentioned coming in, and Jay, that's a context that you live in, thinking about the larger realm of the commons. And Kevin, I know that you've got a huge amount of passion in terms of connecting the environment with people, the context of the issues. Can you say a little bit more about the hope of going down there first and the intentionality of the filming and the interviews and really what you're helping to get out of this as you really move forward with the film?
Sure. The commons is such a tremendous idea because it brings together the idea of justice and sustainability and good governance and many of the things we'd like to see. And it does it in a way in which everyone, a very broad range of groups, can participate. Especially, it gives voice to those who don't have a voice, i.e. the natural world, and people who are disenfranchised or don't feel represented by the current system. And that idea really was behind the concept for our travels, because the Gulf of Mexico is such a condensed, compact spot where so much benefit comes to so many people. I mean, of course, there's the industry that relies on the life of the Gulf, fish and seafood, but oil is a major player in the Gulf. And you see jammed together all of this natural wealth right up against human need and the powerful, powerful interests of corporations and governments trying to keep the system going that benefits them. So we were trying to get the facts on the ground in part, but also because the leak's been at least temporarily capped, what are people's sort of going forward senses of how we could have prevented this in the first place, what the conditions were that led to it happening, and how people could respond with better forms of governance and relationship to the natural world. So that was the sort of the genesis of it. Get real, get on the ground, and find out how people can make the commons work for everyone.
And Kevin, I think that's really a differentiation, certainly, that I've heard in what you've and Jay have talked about and others have talked about this, the context of thinking about this realm and this resource as a commons to us all and community, different than just going out what's going on down there from a standpoint of how are people responding and whether the government is coming in fast. And you're really looking at this much more systemically, much more as a whole view, and how we really connect that more broadly. And that's a distinction, a differentiation. Jay, can you say a little bit more about the commons, just from the sense, just to orient new listeners? I'm using that word, and others may not have actually even spoken or heard too much about James Quilligan on the previous shows, just as an orientation. And before we get into some of the findings, maybe frame it up a little bit to understand when we use that term, what would you be describing?
Well, commons is simply something that we refer to as our shared space. So, you know, this can be anything that transcends our national borders and that you know that we share. So it can be natural resources such as water, the ocean, fisheries, and forests. It can be our cultural commons that we share, like our language. It can be social, like for example with education. So commons is really a broad term that helps us identify our natural and our man-made resource base outside the terms that we traditionally think of it in, which is in terms of business and in terms of government.
Great, Jay. Again, that's great to get that context. I know many of our listeners may not be tuned into it to think about it in that respect, and I can hear that since I don't have my normal tools in front of me, I've gone over a little bit on this segment. I hear the music in the background. But let's continue, folks. We're going to take a short break here with Kevin and Jay. We'll come back in a minute. We're going to begin to discuss more about what did Kevin and Jay find in the nature of the Gulf, the situation, the realities on the ground. Come back in a moment. Thanks.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership? Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8888. That's 1-678-461-8880, or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind. There's a course offered on Seventh Wave Network that you never saw offered in college. One that provides information on how to transform ancient wisdom teachings into everyday life. You'll learn how to create from your spirit and explore the world with all of your senses. Participation is encouraged. Enroll in Spirituality 101, the course you can't afford to miss, with your host, Reverend Norma. classes in session every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time, in your favorite classroom, Seventh Wave Network.
It's all Arizona, all over the world. If you're a local Arizona high school sports fan, or if you're a transplanted fan somewhere else in the world, have we got a show for you. The first internet sports radio talk show focusing solely on high school sports is The Coach's Corner with Scott Lovely. Tune in to talk about your favorite teams, players, or coaches. It's 100% Arizona high school sports coverage and a little bit more. Tune in Mondays at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern, to the Voice America Sports Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back again. We are here with Kevin Hansen, Jay Bender. We are talking about an up-close and personal look at the realities of the Gulf of Mexico, the spill, the people, the communities, the environment. First segment, we set a context, a broad view, perhaps, of where we might go. But, Kevin, Jay, maybe we can sort of delve into this more about the flow of your exploration. You went location to location, person to person. Maybe you can begin to paint a picture of what you were finding there for our listeners on the ground.
Sure. We started in the lower Ninth Ward of New Orleans, which highlighted some of the worst damage from Hurricane Katrina. I interviewed a woman named Shannon Dosenagin from a community group called the Louisiana Bucket Brigade that has distributed air samplers so that individual community members could collect their own data about what they perceived as tremendously toxic conditions related to the oil and chemicals industries in the Gulf. And Shannon Dosenagin was, I think, a terrific interview, and she grew up in the upper Ninth Ward nearby. Jay, you want to describe something about what Shannon said?
Yeah, sure. Well, first, I just want to say that, before we spoke with these interviewees, we made it perfectly clear to them that this was much more, much larger than just simply a filming project, much larger than just simply a documentary. And we explained to them that what we were trying to do is something more long-term and through a sort of engagement process, and hopefully the creation of some form of social charter for the Gulf Coast Commons and for the Gulf Coast bioregion. And, you know, every time we explained this to every interviewee that we spoke to, they just lit up, and it was like, wow, good, finally somebody doing more than just an expose or just documenting our tragedy. Finally somebody that's, you know, wants to come in here and really do something for the long term. And one particular thing that Shannon Dosenagin said during her interview that we did with her there in the lower Ninth Ward was when Kevin asked the question, you know, what is it that an NGO or a group that's trying to help this community, what is it that they can bring? What is it that the community needs? And she made the statement, you know, the one thing that the NGOs and all of the groups that are down there trying to help seem to lack is the ability simply to listen. And so what you find is a lot of organizations and group coming in thinking that they have the answer and thinking that they have the best way forward, and the federal government is included on that situation or that statement. And really what these groups fail to do is sit down and listen to the community members, because really they're the ones who know how to move forward, because it is their resource base. They are the most familiar with it, and they're the ones that have the long-term interest in this. And Shannon understood that, and I think she's going to be a tremendous asset to the team as we move forward and develop this project further.
And so, Jay, say a little bit about listening and that. What did Shannon have to say from that context in terms of giving you some perspectives about the experience, about what their its needs and listening, but what are the needs that they were really expressing in that context?
Well, the needs that that they were expressing in that context, and actually is interesting because her organization, Louisiana Bucket Brigade, is already addressing those issues, is really empowering the community with scientific instruments so that they can go out and do testing for pollution, and they don't have to wait for some third party to come in and do the testing. So they give the community members these easy-to-use instruments to go out and test for poisonous air and air quality. That was one of the first projects that they worked on. And so it empowers the community in a way that they can do their own testing, and so they don't have to rely on other information. They also just started a oil spill crisis map where community members can go out and or they can come to, actually, this online website that they have and document any of the crisis as the oil reaches the land relating to the wildlife, relating to oil sheens on the water, health impacts, livelihood impacts, and other problems. So it's extremely useful resource that they've provided to the community for documenting the different effects that this oil spill has had.
So that links back to your earlier point, the listening, but also the nature of empowering the community so they know what is really going on and it's not relied on externally. They've got a context directly in their hands on that. It's very interesting, very interesting. And so you were localized there as a start. How did the overall flow of this go? I'm sure there were a number of these perspectives. I know that you had you did quite a number of hours of filming. What is the overall flow? You started with the Louisiana Bucket Brigade and where you were there. Where did it go from there, Kevin?
Well, we then interviewed two tribal leaders, Roderick Sylvan, who is chief of the wild Chapatulas, and that's an indigenous body in the New Orleans area that's really got a long history of sort of self-organizing action to take care of itself because there was no one else taking care of them. He then introduced us to a regional chief, Queen Chief Warhorse, a woman who really talked about justice and the fulfillment of promises as being fundamental to clearing the deck, as it were, so that we could begin to talk about what would move us forward. In her view, if we leave these tar balls stuck to us as a people, it's very hard to begin a new conversation in her world without admitting that, we have these problems and they need to be fixed. And over again, we heard that as we moved from New Orleans into Mississippi and Alabama, and then I doubled back and passed through Texas, where we spoke to several people there as well.
And maybe just for both of you, what's the general sense, kind of with Shannon and with the tribal leaders and the flow there, what's the general emotional sense of where are they down there? In terms of trust, in terms of where things are, and as you're saying, they want to get a sense of what's going on. But what's the emotional state?
Jay, please add to this. My sense was that folks were angry and tired. They were distrustful of what they'd been told. They wanted their own information to check what they'd been told because they really didn't believe it. And they were worn out. But they were also hungry for new ideas because clearly the old ideas hadn't worked all that well.
And so how did it evolve then in terms of those ideas? Were you putting some ideas into the mix? And Jay, as you were saying, Shannon was looking for the listening, which I know is what you two were really intending to do down there. But how did that go in terms of an interplay of listening and some new ideas?
Well, that's an interesting question, John, because the interview that we did with the Queen Chief Warhorse of the Choctaw, this this tribal leader, she had some serious grievances that she is concerned with redressing. So Kevin and I must have sat and listened for an hour and a half, an hour and 45 minutes before we even were able to get into the conversation. It was just hearing the history of the people and how the people had been wronged and oppressed, and even how the relationship between the tribe and the government caused some separation amongst the tribes there in Louisiana. And finally, after about 2 hours of listening, we were able to start asking some questions to see if the Queen Chief could engage in this conversation that we're trying to have relating to the commons and relating to bringing together all the diverse groups that need to come together if we are to create a social charter and a trust for the Gulf Coast region. And during the course of that last part of the interview, the Queen Chief said, you know, before you can do anything, you have to have sovereignty within first, and with those things that are around you. And she pointed to the nature that we were sitting in at the time. And right then, immediately, I knew she was right in line with the conversation that we were having, because she understood the sovereignty aspect. And from there, the conversation changed, and we were able to look into the future and discuss maybe even potential partnerships and how we need to move forward to create the Gulf Coast Commons, but at the same time redress grievances.
Right. So what I'm hearing, kind of building on what Kevin was saying, that the emotion there may not even be just in the moment of this. You're really describing some serious grievances and a history and a context of this. And I'd like to pick up on that and continue the journey on the ground that you guys have had. Bring that alive. I hear the music in our ears here. Let's take a short break. Let's keep it as quick as we can. We'll come back and continue. Kevin and Jay really describing the on-the-ground in the Gulf region and the realities and the words that have come up there, sovereignty and listening to key pieces. And that's really what the conversation was intended to be. Curious. Well, let's pick it up here in a moment. Thanks.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership. Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8888. That's 1-678-461-8880, or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind.
Stop wasting time. Get what you want. Live your dream life. The Dream Big Revolution. Imagine having more freedom, better health, more money, happiness. Could your business be more successful? Unless you're living the life you want, you're wasting precious time. Your life is too valuable to waste. Let Leanne Hilgers help you find health, wealth, and happiness. Listen in and live your dream life. Join the Dream Big Revolution. Tune in every Tuesday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time, on the Seventh Wave Network. These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoom Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's avastoneconsulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back with Kevin and Jay today. We're talking about the impacts, the learnings, the reflections, the path forward, ultimately, for the Gulf of Mexico and considering it as a commons. We left the last segment, Jay and Kevin. It seems as if that part of these conversations is really overcoming the nature of some of the trust that's been lost. It's been rebuilding that. Say some more about the process here and then how that evolved. It sounds like you built some foundations early, and I suspect that you learned others, and there's some positives in the region. Maybe you can kind of bridge from where you were with trust into the continuing journey.
Yeah, rebuilding that trust is tremendously important in the views of so many of the people we talked to. Dr. Shirley Laska and Dr. Chris Peterson and their grad student Michelle, University of New Orleans, covered a remarkable example of sort of self-empowerment to get things to happen when, frankly, the community thought nobody would help them. And this was an example in Jean Lafitte Parish after Hurricane Katrina, when the mayor of the town deputized, if not all, almost everybody in the town was deputized. And that allowed them to say, look, we're not going to get help from anybody. We have to do it ourselves. And this was a remarkable example of success after Hurricane Katrina. Jay, you want to say more about what they uncovered?
Yeah, this was a really interesting conversation that we had with Shirley and Chris at the Center for Hazard Assessment, Response, and Technology there at UNO. What they found in this study in Jean Lafitte Parish was that there's a few key components that go into successful post-recovery after a traumatic situation, both natural disasters as well as man-made. And really what it has to do with is community empowerment. The community was empowered by the mayor, like Kevin just said, but it's deeper than that because these folks knew that there needed to be a sense of sharing responsibility and also sharing resources. Shirley was telling us that the owner of the Piggly Wiggly there, which is a supermarket chain that they have in the South, actually opened the doors to the community after Katrina and allowed them to come in and take food because he knew it was just going to go bad anyways, and he knew that eventually it would get paid for. There wasn't any concern there. So it's stories like this where the communities were really working together to try to work through the situation and empowered to do so. The mayor, again, aside from deputizing certain or most of the community, he also allowed the community members to fix the problem. So so if you knew how to do something, you were empowered to go and do it, not only go and do it, but show others how to do it so that they can help too. And that was one of the very few parishes down there in New Orleans that just bounced back from Katrina. And it's this type of participatory action research that they're doing there at the center, and that's deeply interesting to from a commons perspective because that's really how a commons operates with that co-governance aspect to it.
And, Jay, given the context of that and the empowerment that was seen in that situation, did you get a sense of how that contrasts or is in line with the community empowerment at large that was experienced in the Gulf, or was it less than that?
Oh, well, it was a stark contrast to what we were hearing in the Gulf Coast at large as a response to the oil spill. I'm thinking to a informative meeting that Kevin and I attended at Alma Bryant High School in Bayou La Batre, Alabama. One of the speakers, Cassie Calloway, who's the executive director of the Mobile Baykeepers, she said she was organizing as many as 7,000 volunteers at a time to come down and help with the cleanup, people wanting to be involved in some way. And as soon as BP and the government got down there and really set up their command post and started taking charge, she said that they were actually encouraged not to come down and participate, and they were encouraged to just let BP's hired hands and the Coast Guard take care of this. So this is a completely opposite approach of what we were hearing from the successful outcomes that they were doing in Chesapeake Parish.
Well, so I'm hearing two through lines in our conversation. One is around the notion of sovereignty and sovereignty over the environment that you're describing with the tribal leaders, but this is really a fundamental, you're really describing this whole piece around of community empowerment that goes hand in hand with that. I'm wondering, as you guys moved on in your discussions with others, were there other positive places where this was playing out, where you were seeing that empowered community response, the orientation to sovereignty? Anything was coming up on that positive side amidst some of the frustrations?
Yes. Actually, we had a wonderful conversation with Sally Stevens in New Orleans, who's organizing musicians. Now, of course, New Orleans is known for its music, but paradoxically, the musicians are treated rather shabbily, in her view, by the government agencies that support tourism. So she's saying, look, the musicians are not benefiting from the huge benefit brought to the city by their music. So she's organized, and they've incorporated now a co-op to bring together musicians and provide services for them, to negotiate on their behalf and represent them in government, and to, in essence, serve as an organizing point for finance to help them all. And that's the sort of self-organizing that we saw from people who were saying, you know, we need to do it ourselves. Jay?
Sally Stevens of Rhythm Conspiracy Co-op is a great example of this this response to oppression and injustice. And we're seeing that more and more within all kinds of different cultural enclaves that are scattered throughout the world, really. But this is a key question in my mind that's going to come up again and again as we try to organize the commons, is that you have individuals and groups organizing that come from a variety of different backgrounds that have a variety of different issues and are affected in many different ways. And so how do we come together and really address the larger picture? And that's really what we were trying to find out while we were down there, and that's really what we're trying to find out with the long-term project.
So this is really interesting. We're really intersecting, I think, a combination of the up close and personal and the experiences and some of these higher level themes here. I'm wondering, kind of as we're moving into our conversation even here more fully here with this segment and one other to go, are there some of the details and some of those individual conversations that really helped support a through line of some macro themes that came out as well? Anything that really is sticking out in you in terms of the flow of this progression in this particular trip?
Yeah, for me, one of the things that sticks out is that people need to have a voice. Very often, they are afraid to speak out. In some cases, they're encouraged not to speak out by contract. For example, shrimpers were very angry but would only speak off the record because they were afraid that they'd lose the payments they were getting in work for BP, or family members would get in trouble because they had spoken to BP, or even so much as photographed some of the oil. Hmm. So the combination of high-powered economic strength behind a part of the economy really, really stifles or makes people feel that they're stifled about speaking out about change. So, for example, in Texas, we found that the Surfrider Foundation had organized as a voice for people through photography. They were taking lots and lots of pictures, and those pictures were incredibly influential with legislators in protecting the right of surfers to the public beach instead of having it blocked off by private development.
Interesting, very interesting. So it's an interesting intersection to me here of the mixture of the issues. We really kind of came in on this about the oil spill, but I really feel the tentacles that you two are finding in other issues, whether it be around the surfers, whether it be around the munition, the musicians, the commons in a more cultural context, a multidimensionality. But I'm hearing a through line of this empowerment, through line of how do you actually really gain the sovereignty over these areas where it's not just locked up in large business and private enterprise, or it's not just controlled by government in concert with them. It's a really interesting and fascinating discussion, Jay, that you're starting to point out about how to intersect all these groups.
Yeah, that in my mind really is the conversation. It's really the 21st century conversation because it's never been done like this before, you know, where we recognize that government has a legitimate place at the table, business and industry have a legitimate place at the table, but yet these aren't the only two spheres of activity that we should be looking at, and the commons really has a place at the table as well, and it's not recognized because we haven't had that conversation yet. And so that's really what we're trying to start is the commons conversation and waking up to the fact that there really does need to be another sphere of activity in society that's recognized with equal weight as business and government.
So each of your conversations was really delving into that realm, going into different groups, going into the different communities, going into the different individuals in relation to the environment, in relation to the cultural commons, the different dimensions, and really beginning to explore the individual reflections on the spill and other recent disasters and what they're doing and pulling this together. Let's take a break here, folks. Let's come back. Let's see what we can bring together in terms of the further aspects of the trip and some of the larger themes that are coming out from this first trip down there. I think you're getting a sense and flavor and feel for what Jay and Kevin have been up to with this film is bringing a new and fresh perspective to bear. Let's come back and take a look at it in our closing segment. Thanks.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network. The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership? Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8888. That's 1-678-461-8880, or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind.
The Marsh Engel Show, Join the movement to empower yourself with the essentials of feminine power and success, and learn how women around the world are becoming more inspired, more influential, and absolutely amazing. Each week, Marsh sits down for an engaging conversation with women who are boldly committed to living their most amazing life. You'll discover ways to step into your greatest vision, deepen your relationships, and unleash your real creative brilliance. Get ready. It's time to jump into the conversation. That's Monday afternoons at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern for the Marsh Engel Show on the Voice America Business Network.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back to the final segment today. Kevin Hansen, Jay Bender. We're talking about a new film, new documentary, but fundamentally real stories, new possibilities, new insights regarding our commons, how we might get there. Let's maybe bridge here, Jay and Kevin, maybe with a last perspective, sort of a last on-the-ground experience that might be a bridge into where the project is going.
Yeah, we interviewed a ship captain named Bubba Belkowitz in Grand Isle, Louisiana. And Bubba is deeply tied into the community, and he was open about expressing some contradictions that people face. And I think, Jay, you want to lend your perspective on that? These are really powerful.
Yeah, this was one of the most interesting things that that I heard while I was down there, because the town, the little island of Grand Isle, Louisiana, is made up of about 20% residents and 80% vacation homeowners. And what the captain was telling us while we were down there is, you know, don't kid yourself. There's a lot of money being made in this. In fact, the shrimpers that are down there working for the VOO, that's the Vehicles of Opportunity, that BP has set up, they're making more money than they would if they were out there shrimping right now. And the vacation homeowners, they're making more money because they're renting out their vacation homes to cleanup workers, way more money than they would if they were just had a typical season. But yet, at the same time, we're hearing the vacation homeowners have issues with the environment and with the tar on the sand and with the way that it's affecting the environment and their vacation space. And from the shrimpers, they're concerned about the long-term issues of the Gulf Coast and shrimping and the larva that's going to be harvested next year and the dispersants and how that's going to affect their catch. So you have a real contradiction here, where you have people that are advocating against BP, the oil spill, the way that things are being handled. But yet, at the same time, they're on their paycheck. They're on the books, and they're taking money from them. So this creates not only a contradiction within one's own self, but also for people viewing the situation, because it makes it real easy for somebody to say, hey, well, look at that person. Here they are working in the VOO. And at the same time, they're raking in all this money, but yet, you know, now that shrimping season is open, because it did open last week, why aren't they out there shrimping, you know? And so this isn't a problem of these people being contradictory. This is a problem of the way that the system is set up. This is a problem where these people don't really have the option. These shrimpers, if they don't work for BP, what is the odds that they're going to go catch some shrimp that people are going to want to eat? What if they throw their nets in the water and they pull up tar balls? You know, so this is a larger issue that speaks to the way the system is set up and how it creates contradictions in our own society.
And so then I guess the question comes, to what extent are people there, and did you hear that they're desirous of getting this up to a higher level conversation?
Absolutely. And that was one of the really remarkable, wonderful things, was that almost to a person, they said, we want in to the bigger conversation about how to do this right in the future. When we spoke about the commons, their eyes lit up, as Jay had said. They hadn't heard of the concept before, but they were very intrigued. They want to know more, and they want to be in that dialogue. And they see it as emblematic of issues faced by people all over the world in similar situations. So the work with the UN Commission on Sustainable Development, to me, this adds a new piece of valuable data to that work going forward. And I'm hoping the documentary that comes out of this is going to be a benefit to those who are excited about, you know, seeing things change for the better and not persisting in the same old patterns that have been very destructive in the past.
So as we're in here to the last few minutes, three or four minutes or so in terms of the show, maybe, Jay, can you describe a little bit more, and Kevin as well, to support that, where this conversation, this larger conversation, is and can be going?
Well, I'm hoping that this larger conversation is going to result in an on-the-ground engagement process that the residents of the Gulf, and when I say the Gulf, I'm talking about Texas, Louisiana, Florida, Mississippi, Mexico, Cuba, because what we have to do is we have to begin to think of things in terms of bioregions, because our commons, they transcend our national borders, and so we need everybody at the table that has a vested interest in this. And so what I would like to see is representatives from all factions of society, from many different geographic locations, sit down and discuss perhaps the creation of a social charter or some other mechanism that would empower the people outside of the sphere of business and government.
And what I know, this is part of a process. There's a number of things going on, and this is an opening piece to listen to communities and so forth. But is there a fabric and sort of a through line to that, Jay and Kevin? What's anything being envisioned at this point about how that might actually be carried forward?
Well, I think we need to spark the dialogue. People need to, and are looking for, I think, a new door, where things don't just grind on the way they have. You see, a disaster like this, we found person after person who said, I'm still in debt from Hurricane Katrina, and now I've got to take out another note in order to pay for the damage from this mess. And they are hobbled by that. And that idea that they immediately lose some of their sort of life control when disasters repeatedly hit them is it's very discouraging. But you know what? They are not leaving. They've, like the Skrmetta family that runs the Ship Island Ferry, wonderful, wonderful family. Captain Louis Skrmetta is a fantastic person, and he told us really the inside story. They are here for the long haul. They are devoted and committed to making the Gulf situation work, and they want to be a part of and lead the action that takes forward something that brings a new responsibility, a new level of justice, and a new level of sustainability to the conversation.
Well, guys, I think that's a rich picture. I think that parallels where we have been here on Zoomed with the up close and personal, getting a sense of the realities of the lives of people and how there's somewhat of a box of sorts that you're describing, both Jay and Kevin, but the big picture and the possibilities. I want to thank you both, though. I hear the music in our ears for this week. But most of all, I appreciate you coming on. Kevin, I heard in your voice when this first was being envisioned, the passion to get this moving and to bring it to life down there. And I really want to congratulate you to get that in getting that going. And likewise, Jay, you've articulated this well. I really hope this continues. Look forward to hearing more. We'll have to continue with more from both of you as this film progresses. Thanks for being on Zoom this week, though.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, John.
Thank you both. Okay. Folks, we'll see you. That conversation continues. That is the larger picture. You know, we have been talking about the nature of the commons, the sovereignty, the way in which we might approach this, more tangibility, more to come on this. This is the first shot at this, but our conversation continues as well on the Gulf of Mexico and what we can both do and learn and address going forward. We'll continue that conversation out here for this week. Come on back. Enjoy next week. Thanks, folks. See you then. Bye-bye.
Thank you again for listening to Zoomed Leadership with host John Schmidt. Please be sure to join us again next Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. And have a terrific week.